This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Jesse Reynolds, who's the program director at the Center for Genetics and Society. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thanks, Mark.
What can you tell us that people don't generally know so far about what's going on with the ICOC, CIRM, stem cell research project from your point of view?
Right, just to get people caught up a little bit, in November, California voters approved Proposition 71, which establishes the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, which will distribute research grants totaling about $3 billion over the next 10 years to be funded by a similar amount in bonds, although the total cost will be probably about double that when you include interest. The Institute is being governed by the Independent Citizens Oversight Committee, the ICOC, which just yesterday finished up its second meeting.
Okay, what do you know about what happened at that meeting?
Well, it was the first meeting with a substantive agenda with action items. The first meeting was, in my opinion, largely ceremonial, and the only action that they took was the election of a chair and vice chair of the committee.
Okay.
So yesterday, the ICOC began to talk about issues like intellectual property and the formation of committees, which will search out members of of working groups and conduct a search for a president of the ICOC. Should I say a president of the Institute would be more accurate.
Okay.
Who will execute the day-to-day functions.
So the ICOC met to discuss finding a president for the CIRM.
Right.
Okay. Well, where did this meeting take place?
This was in Los Angeles at the University of Southern California.
Was it open to the public, the meeting?
Yes.
Okay. And what was accomplished there?
Well, from our perspective, just a little bit of background about where where I'm coming from.
You have a little background about the Center for Genetics and Society as well.
Right. We're a nonprofit organization working. I would call us an education and advocacy organization, and we work to ensure responsible governance of new human genetic and reproductive technologies.
Okay.
And we support embryonic stem cell research and its public funding, but we were uncomfortable with and eventually opposed Proposition 71, not in principle, but based on the details of what we felt was a number of problems. It was too much money, there was not enough oversight, accountability and transparency built into the initiative, enormous potential for conflicts of interest, not enough protection of research subjects and egg providers and so forth.
Other than that, you found it pretty good.
Yeah. But let's be honest. In principle, we want to see more funding of biomedical research, including embryonic stem cell research. We feel it would be better on the federal level, but we recognize that that's probably not going to be happening too soon.
Right.
So we sympathize with where the backers of Prop 71 were coming from. We just wish that they could have written a better bill. So what the center is trying to do now with the ICOC is to say, you know, hey, we disagreed about this, but from here, it's law, and we recognize that, but we think that you can and should do better. You can implement higher standards than are mandated by law, and we urge you to do so, and in fact think that it's necessary because a lot of eyes are on California. I mean, this is in the media all across the country and even around the world. It's an enormous undertaking, and I want to see them get it right.
Has your organization put together essentially a list of reforms or standards that you would like to see them adopt beyond what the law requires?
Well, we're not a detailed list. Our press release that we issued a couple of days ago gave some outlines of some of the things we're talking about. If I can just give a couple of examples.
Sure.
for example, they can fully disclose the financial interests in the various board memberships of the ICOC members and require that they have no investments in businesses that might benefit from activities of the ICOC.
Right. Now, Mr. Klein, who's the chair of the ICOC, has pledged to follow that prescription, right?
Yes, yes. Actually, just yesterday he released a letter where he, expanded his promise from holding no biomedical stock to holding no investment in biomedical or construction fields, which would be likely to benefit from activities.
Because after all, he is a real estate developer and not a biochemist.
Exactly. We felt the promise about the biomedical stock may have been something of a distraction.
He's also a lawyer, of course, and knows how to parse his language.
Yeah. Now, at first reading, I thought I was really encouraged by the letter, and I need to read it a little bit more closely.
Right.
But, of course, what we want to see is, A, make this a policy, B, make it apply to all the ICOC members and the members of the various working groups, particularly the facilities working group, which will advise the ICOC on where to construct facilities. And I think that the language of the policy needs to just be slightly broader than what he said, but that's getting into fine print.
Okay. Well, speaking about the construction aspect of this, how much of the $3 billion is earmarked for construction? Do you know?
My memory says, and this is putting me on the spot a little bit,
right.
Something like 10%, I think, is earmarked for construction. It might be 5%. My memory's a little vague.
Okay.
But although that's a small percentage, we're talking about 10% of $3 billion.
That's $300 million.
Right. And most of that's going to be at the beginning. Of course, you want to build your buildings and then do the research. So the next few years are going to be the period where I think most of that $300 million or so allocated for construction is spent.
Now, do you know if that $300 million includes building a facility or finding space for the, and I'm not sure which this is, the ICOC or the CIRM or both of them to do their administrative work?
Right. I'm not sure whether that is included or not. That was a topic of conversation to find a headquarters. Of the institute would be a more accurate way to phrase it.
It's where the institute, which I guess I've been referring to as the CIRM,
right?
Where to put that? What was said about that?
Well, a committee was set up to start looking into that, and I believe they approved a resolution that authorized that approved the concept of going into at least an interim lease so that they can immediately set up some staff.
And now, do you know who is actually minding the store here? Before I talked to you today, and over the last day or so, I've contacted Steve Wesley's office, Phil Angelides' office, mm-hmm. tried to reach the public relations agency that's running the PR for this operation,
right?
And was kind of stymied everywhere, and wasn't even able to reach anyone. Is there a number or a place or anything other than Robert Klein's office that, which doesn't return any calls ever, where the public or the press can contact these people to find out what they're doing?
Well, this is an interesting situation, and although I sympathize with the ICOC and the CIRM where they're at, I don't think they've handled this well. The situation they were put in is they're a new agency. They have a governing board and they have a mandate, and they want to act quickly. And I think that there's social and medical reasons to get moving quickly. However, they have no staff.
Right.
And there's sort of this chicken or the egg thing about, okay, well, we need a location before we hire staff,
right.
But we need to have staff to be answering phone calls and preparing materials and so forth for each meeting. And so they're caught in this trap. And what they have done up till now is, Robert Klein was the chair of the Yes on 71 campaign, which was called Cures for California.
Right.
That organization, which was a 501c4, that is a political organization, after the election, morphed into a nonprofit 501c3 that is called the California Research and Cures Coalition.
Right, it's on California Avenue in Palo Alto, a short bike ride away from Mr. Klein's home in Woodside.
Right, exactly, and I believe it has the same mailing address as Cures for California, and largely the same staff.
Right, well, they're the people who I contacted and asked if they could arrange for an interview for someone to talk about the public meetings that were going to be held this month.
Right.
To get input so that I could interview them and encourage people to come to those meetings.
Mm-hmm.
They said that I had to talk to Fiona Hutton, the contact person at Redgate Communications, who's the public relations firm
mm-hmm.
for this. Calls, no one answers there. They have a voice message that says, we're gone until December, until January 3rd.
Right.
They don't return voicemails. And I was referred to them by Steve Wesley's office as well,
mm-hmm.
and Phil Angelides' office said, we've appointed people, we're out of the loop now.
Right, exactly. And yeah, it was the controller's office told me a similar thing. They told me to contact the CRCC.
Right.
And our concern is that not only is the CRCC our state agencies referring people to the CRCC for more information, but the CRCC set up this second meeting of the committee, the ICOC. Sorry for all the
no, it's okay. If we repeat it often enough, the CRCC is the California Research and Cures Coalition, which is a 501c3 that devolved out of the 501c4 that put the initiative through.
Right, and up until yesterday, it was chaired by Robert Klein. Now, not only did they arrange that meeting and our government officials referring to them, the public agenda of that second meeting referred people for more information to contact the CRCC.
Yeah, well, I contacted the CRCC. They sent me to the public relations agency,
right,
which
right.
doesn't return calls.
And they're not handling this well, but that's not the whole problem.
Okay.
They're also, for example, they've set up basically public information sessions around the state. The
right.
first one is on Monday, I believe it's in San Francisco.
Right.
And our concern is that the CRCC is positioning itself as acting as sort of the public front end of the operation, where,
right.
where the real decisions are being made by the ICOC, and that's not an arrangement that is conducive to democracy, and I'm slightly concerned that that might be an illegal arrangement.
Well, does the ICOC have a phone number or a receptionist? Or
no. I mean, they're in a bind. It's a new organization.
Right.
Right. They have no staff. Their first official staff person was created yesterday when Robert Klein, who earlier in the day had resigned as chair of the CRCC,
right.
A resolution was passed at the meeting of the ICOC, which appointed Robert Klein as interim president of the IRM. So presently,
he's the interim president of the CIRM.
Yes,
of the institute.
Yes.
So he's gone from being chair of the, as well as we could take it back further, originator, author, proponent of the initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was unanimously nominated as the chair of the ICOC,
mm-hmm.
and then the ICOC, which he chairs, has now made him the interim president of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine.
Yes.
Okay.
So, although, I mean, we sympathize with the position that they're in,
yes.
our concern is that we just feel that things could be arranged in a manner that's a little bit more transparent, a little bit more accountable, and that distributes power a little bit more widely. For example, the interim head could have not been a president, but for example, could have been an administrative officer with less powers, and the ability to only enter into contracts and agreements that have a limited time period of impact, which is not the case now, and that person should be someone besides Robert Klein.
Right. It's starting to look like Kind Hearts and Coronets, where Alec Guinness plays all the parts.
It's starting to look like that, although it was interesting that today I read, I think in the Sacramento Bee, that Robert Klein has promised to only serve half of his term as chair of the ICOC.
That's half of a six-year term?
Half of a six-year term. He will step down in 3 years.
Okay. Well, that's news also. So, as things have been going forward so far, is this giving you hope or causing you trepidation as to the future course of this operation in terms of transparency and governance?
Well, to be honest, a little bit of both.
Okay.
There was more the members of the ICOC, and particularly Robert Klein, at yesterday's meeting, addressed the issues that we've been bringing up, particularly the issues around transparency and openness of operations as a governmental agency, but also conflicts of interest and developing strong standards around intellectual property and protection of research subjects. We're starting to talk about them, and I think that that's a good first step. But I think we're just going to have to wait and see whether this is rhetoric and posturing or whether this is simply there's been just a few accidental stumbles and they're sincere about their commitments to these things. I hope it's the latter.
Focus on these working groups. How are they going to be created? Who's going to be on them? What's their responsibility going to be? And what kind of protections exist in the law now to prevent conflicts of interest from arising?
Okay.
In that context,
there will be three working groups that are advisory bodies to the ICOC. One will make advice about what grants to fund. Another will work with advice about what facilities to build, and the third will advise about standards, research standards, and possibly also issues around the actual ICOC members and so forth, conflicts of interest.
Okay.
The Prop 71 language details a little bit about the composition of these working groups, but they largely consist of people who are not members of the ICOC.
But no one can be on the ICOC and on a working group?
I think largely that is the case. My memory is a little vague here, but I'm thinking that there might be one or two positions on the working groups that are delegated to an ICOC.
Sort of an ex officio kind of
position. Yeah, positions. In that sort of role. But and how they're being picked is they're chosen, I believe, by the ICOC, but what happened yesterday is the ICOC formed search subcommittees that will look for and recommend to the full committee members for these working groups.
Let me step one step back here. In terms of the division of authority between the ICOC and the CIRM, who is it exactly who's going to sign off on giving out the grants for the research and the construction contracts?
In the end, all decisions are made by all major decisions are made by the ICOC, acting as the equivalent of a board of directors of a corporation.
Okay.
But if I can get back to something you mentioned earlier about the monitoring and the conflicts and so forth around the working groups.
Right.
They are explicitly excluded in Prop 71 from many protections around the Open Meeting Act, the Public Records Act, conflicts of interest, and so forth, on the grounds that the members of the working groups are not state employees and they are not decision-making bodies. They are only advisory bodies. And our concern is that those bodies, which lack those standards, will be where the decisions are really made, and then the ICOC just serves to rubber stamp it. And in a way, I mean, when you look at the composition of the ICOC, these are all busy people with a lot of commitments.
Those busy people who make up the ICOC, how covered are they by financial disclosure rules?
That's well, they for the most part they must meet current state law. The Prop 71 does not add any extra protection against state against conflicts of interest. But, for example, they will be subject to the existing state law. I'm not sure the name of the law, but the law that's governed by the Fair Political Practices Commission and so forth.
Does that mean that they, if a Bay Area or San Diego biotech company is in line to get a contract for $1 million or two or $10 million to do some kind of stem cell research, can members of the ICOC who will be approving that grant own stock in that company?
I believe if I understood, there was a presentation yesterday by a deputy attorney general outlining the rules. My memory of that is that at a certain level of investment, they would have to recuse themselves. But for most likely investments, it's only a matter of disclosure. I'm a little uncertain about that.
Who all is in charge of deciding how much, what those limits are, and what kind of disclosure? Is that someone in the Attorney General's office or the Attorney General's office itself?
That I believe is governed by the Fair Political Practices Commission, which I believe is part of the Attorney General's office.
I don't think so. I think it's an independent state agency, but you could
be
right.
You probably know better than I do.
Okay, but in fact, then. The members, there are 29 of them or so on the ICOC?
There's 29 members on the ICOC.
Okay, and so if they own stock or they own mutual funds that are invested in biotech companies, there's no prohibition on them holding that stock and simultaneously voting funds to the company that they hold an ownership interest in under current law.
If the voting is direct and they own stocks or bonds in the company, I believe they are prohibited from making that vote. Mutual funds are excluded from that situation because I suppose the logic is that it's one step removed.
Well, yeah, but if there's a California stem cell biotech mutual fund, though,
right,
and they own that, there's a pretty good chance that they'll be doling out money to companies they have financial interests in.
Right. I mean, Our concerns about conflicts of interest aren't. It's very easy to get to. There's direct and overt conflicts of interest, and I think that those have largely been addressed.
All right.
By existing California law, but we all know that in politics there are indirect interests, for example, the ownership of investments by family members, let's say.
Right.
Or what's sometimes called the log rolling of votes.
Right.
Where it amounts to vote trading.
Right.
And that's what we're a little more concerned about taking place. I mean, there's $3 billion going to be given away, and this is going to be managed by 29 people who are politically powerful, very well connected, and I imagine for the most part are fairly wealthy with investments in a wide range of areas.
That amounts to $100 million per.
Yes. Yes. And in a, yes, California is a big state with a big economy, but that's still an enormous amount of money sloshing around.
Okay. So what steps are, if any, is Center for Genetics and Society taking to try to bring these issues to the fore? And an issue we haven't really talked about at all, and I talked about it more in an interview I did with State Senator Deborah Ortiz a few weeks ago, is that among the many provisions of Proposition 71 were a lot of provisions saying that the laws, the constitutional amendment implemented by it, couldn't be changed by the legislature.
Right, right. Now, there's a couple of ways that can be that there is room to move, and then I'll talk about what CGS might do.
Right.
One thing is that the ICOC can choose to adopt whatever standards it wants.
Right.
And we plan to put pressure on the ICOC for them to do that, and I hope they will.
Okay.
Another way is that legislatively, a law can impact a related area to what Proposition 71 does. For example, if hypothetically the state legislature passed stricter conflicts of interest prohibitions,
right,
that applied to all state employees, that would apply to the ICOC.
Although it wouldn't apply, as you seem to have said, to the working groups who are explicitly not state employees.
Right, exactly. So there's still need for that first mechanism I talked about, where the ICOC can choose to do that. But for example, the state legislature could adopt a law that says official advisory committees to state agencies are covered by this conflict of interest prohibition.
Well, are these working groups, quotes, official advisory agencies?
I believe they are. I believe they are because it's there in, it's listed there in Proposition 71 that says, which is now part of the California Code, that says, you know, there will be these three working groups and their advisory in their capacity.
Are there conflict of, but as of now, no conflict of interest rules apply to these working groups, is that right? And the members thereof.
Right.
Which means that if some committee working on one of the working groups saying we got to do this kind of stem cell research or preparation for it, and there's a company that does it, those working group members can own stock in the companies that they recommend get the grants to do the research, and
yes.
No one, and that there's nothing to stop them from voting on them, and there's nothing to force them to reveal their investments either.
That is my understanding of the situation, and that's why we're worried. And not only will the citizens of California not know, but the ICOC members will probably not know.
You mean the working group members? Well, if the
ICOC... they will know who's on the working groups, but they won't know what stocks and investments members of the working group have.
Can't they, as part of the vetting process, ask them?
I suppose they could. I don't know if they have... I would doubt they have what would amount to... The legal powers to force them, to
but they
that.
could not appoint them if
right.
they didn't come
right.
clean.
Right, right, right.
Okay.
I mean, these are the types of policies that we've been asking, not in this much specificity,
right?
But to say, look, these working group meetings, the meetings need to be open. There need to be conflicts of interest.
They need to be open. As of now, those meetings will be all completely secret, and the transcripts of them will be completely secret.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
You sometimes in a petri dish you want to have it in the dark, or mushrooms grow best in the dark. But what's your view on whether public policy about $3 billion would best be developed in the dark?
Well, it's clear that when the voters approve this, they wanted to see this go forth. But
right.
there's that is not a blank check for the ICOC and its working groups to operate how it wants. There's a lot of room for the ICOC and the working group to operate in a transparent and accountable fashion.
Okay. So what is the Center for Genetics and Society going to do to see that things move in the direction they'd like to see? It would like to see.
Well, I think our next step is things have been moving so fast. I mean, the election was in November and January now. The meetings are happening about once every 3 weeks. The next one's February 3rd in San Diego. And more and more critics have been speaking out. There's Californians Aware, which is sort of a public access to information project.
Right.
There's the Coalition for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights has been joining into this. Mr. Flanagan has spoken out about the potential conflicts of interest in Proposition 71. Of course, there's also the California Nurses Association and Bay Area Public Interest lawyer Charles Halpern has been prominent. And we're each of these groups is focusing in a slightly different area, but overall we're saying the same thing. That yeah, we support stem cell research and we support its public funding, but the ICOC is just getting off a little bit on the wrong foot, and we want to get it on the right track now, so there's not problems down the road.
Is there any consideration by your group or some of the other ones you mentioned of getting together in a grand coalition to essentially draft proposed reforms that you think that the ICOC ought to adopt and then work together to push them in that direction?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one possibility. And I think what we're going to be doing in the next few weeks is to talking with these other groups and individuals who have similar concerns and see how we can best work together.
Okay, and all of you are welcome to appear separately or jointly on California Politics Day to talk about what you're doing.
Thank you.
If there's anything else you'd like to say, go ahead. Otherwise, I'll thank you for your time and try to track down some more of these people.
Okay, good luck, Mark. I think I voiced most of what's on my mind.
Okay, thanks very much. Don't hang up, but I'm going to thank you and turn off the recording.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mark.
Bye.